All right, it looks like we're live. Welcome to the Financial Blogger Podcast. My name is Philip Taylor with FinCon. All the episodes of the Financial Blogger Podcast can be found at financialbloggerconference.com. Again, I'm Philip Taylor, founder of FinCon and PT Money Personal Finance. I'm excited to have a special guest on with me today, Ms. Jean Chatsky. Of course, you guys know Jean from her role as financial editor at NBC's Today Show, her work with Oprah, many of the books that she's produced, Money Rules, Money 911, so many other titles. And in some ways, she's become the sort of the face of what I think is personal finance journalism. So it's really an honor for me to have her on today, especially since she'll also be a keynote speaker for us at FinCon this fall. So Jean, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here, and I'm excited about FinCon coming up. I've been hearing from a number of the bloggers who are going to be attending, and they're all sounding so excited to get there and say hi. And so this is my first time at FinCon, but I'm really, really looking forward to it.
Awesome. Well, just in case someone might not be familiar with your background, maybe share a little bit about sort of your background and what all you have going on now.
Sure. So I am a longtime personal finance journalist. I've been in journalism since before I got out of college, which is a very long time ago now. I've been covering personal finance for more than 20 years. And I got into it essentially through a back door. I knew I wanted business journalism when I got out of school. I started at Working Woman magazine, spent a little time on Wall Street when I had trouble finding my next job, but eventually made it to Forbes. And then I was on the startup team at Smart Money. And that was where my interest in personal finance, and I think my platform, essentially really took off. Smart Money was a fantastic place to work. We were allowed to look at life through the window of money. And sometimes when people ask me why I've been able to cover one subject for such a long time, this is what I tell them, because I'm covering life. I'm just doing it from this particular angle. I can write about anything, talk about anything. And to me, that's really, really fascinating. I got on the Today Show when I was at Smart Money. We had a very engaged PR person who essentially threw a lot of people on TV. I was very, very fortunate in that I happened to stick, and I've been doing this ever since.
That's wonderful. So a new project you have, and I want to get back to a lot of that. That sounds interesting, the sort of the phases you've gone through there. We're definitely going to hit those topics, but okay. One of the things I want to talk to you about was your new project, which is Money School. So maybe you could share a little bit about what Money School is and what that might mean for people who are looking for some financial education from you.
So a lot of people over the years have stopped me on the street or written to me to say, can you come to my house and just work with me for an hour? I think I could be fine if you could just sit down with me. And I would love to do that, but I've got two kids and, you know, the country's hard to traverse. So I decided to start an online school, and I'm teaching individual, not one-on-one in terms of the people, but individual subject classes. So you don't have to sign up for a whole 6 weeks or 8 weeks, but I'm covering the topics that my audience has told me they need to learn more about. So budgeting, getting out of debt and starting to get your credit on the road to recovery, talking about retirement and the fact that you can, yes, indeed, retire, talking about spending a little bit less and saving a little bit more. And then I've got a jumpstart class that touches on each of these areas for people who prefer to do it that way rather than with a deep dive. My dad was a college professor, so I'm enamored with with office hours. I think office hours are really helpful, and I know that whenever I leave a lecture or whenever I leave the doctor's office, inevitably a week later I have questions. So each registration comes with an invitation to office hours. You get a 45-minute lecture plus 15 minutes of Q&A at the end, but there's also the opportunity to come to office hours later and ask any additional questions that you have. And there are worksheets, there are handouts, there are quizzes. So it's very interactive. We're running them on the Adobe platform. So we've got a chat room that is running throughout the class so people can talk to each other. They can talk to one of my associates who's there to answer questions. And we've been in beta. We just rolled them out. The first live class is coming up. But I've been hearing from the people who were in our beta classrooms that they're really enjoying budgeting. I mean, who enjoys budgeting? So that's, you know, that's fantastic. I'm very, very happy with the response so far.
That's great. And that sounds excellent. I mean, I with a blog, I deal with a lot of questions, you know, daily and weekly, and it's hard to sort of get to a lot of them. So this is great that you've been able to sort of create a way for you to give back, answer questions to a lot of people all at once. So will this be limited? Is there a limited set of seats in the classroom, so to speak?
There is a limited set of seats in the classroom, and quite frankly, that's okay with me. I don't want it to get so large that people feel like they don't have the ability to get their questions answered. If we find that we've got overwhelming response, I'll add more sections. That's how we'll deal with it. So that people really feel like they get that handholding that they were looking for. And that's sort of what they're telling me. The people that have written to me after the classes that we've held already say, you know, I feel like you were just talking to me, which is exactly what I was hoping for. And I teach them right here. I teach them in my home office. I these are my kids' paintings at all ages behind me on the wall. So it's, you know, very friendly, non-threatening environment, which is exactly how it was planned. And you've introduced me to some of the bloggers in your network already, and we're working to try to spread the word with guest posts and with giveaways, and so anything that anybody wants to do to try to get involved with this would be awesome.
Okay, excellent. You seem to enjoy the interaction with readers or with listeners, viewers, whatever it is, and really engaging with them about helping with their money. I mean, that's sort of unusual from the, what's that?
I'm from the Midwest.
Okay. That's your excuse, right?
Exactly.
But that's sort of someone with a journalism background and someone who sort of worked in media, being that close to the consumer, you know, doesn't come natural. So that's special that you have that desire and that you're able to sort of scale that in this way.
I'm trying. You know, it's definitely a work in progress. I don't know why you got into this to begin with, but I got into this to begin with because I was a mess with my money. And I think, you know, one of the reasons that I like interacting with people is because I feel like if I can do this, really anybody can do this.
Yep. Good stuff. So where can people find more about Money School?
On my website, which is jeanchatsky.com, and it's Chatsky with a Z.
Okay. No. Very good. So speaking of sort of your philosophy with money, one of the things I've seen you say before is, if you want to own your life, you have to own your money. So maybe talk about what that means to you and how that translates into action for readers or listeners.
So I've done enough research over the years to be truly convinced that more money doesn't buy more happiness once you get to the point where you can actually afford to pay your rent and afford to pay your mortgage and go on vacation every once in a while. You know, once you are living comfortably, more money doesn't buy more happiness. What does bring you more happiness, no matter what level of earnings or wealth you're at, is more control over your money. And control's not rocket science. Control is about doing the same relatively simple things over and over and over and over again. Whether we're talking about saving or automatic investing or getting out of debt, moving into, again, you know, saving on a regular basis, it's all It's all about control. And when you control something, you own it. That's what I mean by owning your money. You have to drive. You can't let somebody else drive and take your eyes, off what's happening in your financial picture, because that's how it all goes to hell.
Yep. Makes sense. I love it. It's about awareness, right? I mean, if your awareness is half that battle of control, right?
Yeah, and it's not, there are plenty of complicated instruments and complicated investments and complicated tools out there. If you don't want to deal with the level of complication, you really don't have to. It's at that point you're really grasping for basis points. For most of us, it's not worth it. We want to do other things with our lives rather than try to eke out a little bit of extra return. So you focus on those things that are going to get you the biggest bang for the buck, and they tend to be the relatively simple things, and then you can use your money for the tool. Your money becomes the tool that it was meant to be, to get you the things that you really want out of life, whether it's more time with your kids or a bigger house or whatever it happens to be. You can get it if you're the executor of this world.
I like it. So you're starting a money school. So maybe talk a little bit about financial education and how we as bloggers or as new media creators can sort of help raise the awareness of maybe financial education or financial literacy or...
I see the bloggers as the financial educators. Mm-hmm. I mean, financial education, unfortunately, has been kind of a flop in our schools. The states are so stressed and so strapped with having to deal with all of the mandated tests that their students have to take, that there hasn't been room in the curriculum in most cases for financial literacy and for financial education. And that means it's up to the lay people who choose to take it on, and some of those people are within corporations, but others are, people like you and me and parents who care about the welfare of their kids and want their kids to come out and be able to deal with their money in the world. And so, I think it's great when bloggers and content creators can encourage financial education, but I also think we have to just accept the fact that we provide it.
Mm-hmm. And so there's a certain level of, well, for me, I mean, I had an accounting background. My dad was a CPA. I graduated college with a degree, got my CPA, and I still had some personal finance issues in my life. And so I think that's a testament to there's a certain level of experience also that people have to go through to sort of get to a better place. And you yourself sort of went through a similar experience. So there's got to be, I think, a good mixture of education, but to a certain degree, we just sort of have to let everyone live their life and get to that point where they're ready to make that choice to control it, like you said.
Well, that's it. I mean, and what we know now is that education in and of itself is not enough to drive behavior change. There has to be education plus, and education, it can be education plus a tool, it can be education plus the thing that gets you to do something, which for many people is a life event. It could be the birth of a child, it could be getting married, it could be getting divorced, it could be a new job. Education teaches you, but then you need that little oomph to get you where you need to go.
Gotcha.
And that comes in different parts of people's lives. There's not one all-encompassing thing.
Right. So for some people, there may be a life event that says, for someone that says, hey, I've got to start a budget now. So what is a budget? How do I get going with that? So that's a question coming from Jay Money. He says, Jay Money from Budgets Are Sexy.
I do. I was emailing with him earlier today.
Okay. He wants to know if you think budgets are sexy.
I think budgets are sexy. I I think a lot of people don't. I mean, I think a lot of people think budgets are one of those things that it's kind of an unpleasant word for a lot of people, like a diet. But once you know where your money is going, and that's what a budget's all about, right? You know where it's going, and then you direct it to where you want it to go so that you can get the things that you want to get and also save something. That's a really empowering feeling. Once you know that, oh my gosh, I can actually save. Look how fast my savings are growing. Look at what I've done in my 529, all of which is made possible by a budget. That makes you feel really, really powerful and independent, and those things are really sexy.
Yeah, I agree. Do you personally use a budget, and/or do you see it a budget more as a way to get someone sort of back on track and bring awareness to their situation? Or are you the type that would say you need it every month, every month, every month?
I am not an every month, every month, every month. I think you need it when you're trying to get back on track. And for me, the purpose of the budget is to get yourself to save. And then once you're saving, as long as you're not going into debt, you're pretty free with everything else, right? You get the money into savings, and then you can decide what else is happening on the with the rest of the assets. So the last time that I used a really, really strict budget, I mean, I'll give you two examples actually. When I got divorced, I went, very, very hardcore into budgeting, and I knew where every cent was going. I was tracking really, really carefully. I knew, exactly what I was doing on a regular basis because I had these savings goals set for myself, and I wanted to make sure I met them. And the only way to actually do that was with a budget. Same thing happened when I got remarried. I mean, at that point, my husband and I, we did it together first with pencil and paper and then on the computer. Right now, my online bank accounts, they keep me honest. And I have to say, I'm one of those people, I don't balance my checkbook. I haven't for years because I look at my money so often because when a bill comes in, I just pay it. So I'm always in touch with what's going on.
I like it. You said something, and I have to ask about it. Do you automate bill payment?
Sometimes I do, and sometimes some bills are automated and some bills are not automated. The mortgage is automated. I do automate some things by putting them on a credit card because if I'm going to pay it off, I really want to get the miles, and I've gone on some really nice trips with those miles. So, I do that as much as I possibly can. And some bills I don't, but I do try to pay as much as possible through the online account because I find that rather than writing a check by hand, even if it's a one-off, it gives me a much better record.
Gotcha. Man, I could talk to you about this stuff for days.
I'm a geek. I like it too.
But I do want to get into some of the things that I know some of the viewers might be interested in, which is the sort of the blogging aspect and sort of your approach to new media. And so maybe talk about your blog at genechatsky.com and some of the things you're doing there, how you're using the blog. Maybe that's a good place to start. So what's on your blog? What can people find on your blog, and what are you trying to do with it?
So we've recently gone through a bit of a retooling at genechatsky.com. I redesigned the website. It needed to be refreshed. And we've got an editorial calendar of sorts. So on Mondays, we do the mailbag and answer some questions. On Tuesdays, it's Try It Out Tuesday, and it's something new going on in the world of money. On Wednesdays, we've got guest bloggers. So we're, spreading the love a little bit. And if anybody wants to be a guest blogger for me, by all means, let me know what you've got to say and we'll talk about it. On Thursdays is Thought-Provoking Thursday. I love everything that's happening in the world of behavioral finance. I think there's a slew of of interesting research being done. So we figure out what's going on and we report about it. On Fridays, we've got Frugal Friday. So we do deals, and that dovetails nicely with the Frugal Friday segment that I do on the Today Show. I've added some tools, some calculators and things like that. Some of the blog posts are designed to sort of reach out and bring people back to the site. You know, check out what we've got going on. Check out Money School. And they're designed to sort of keep the content fresh and keep people essentially coming back.
I like it. I like just the approach of having a calendar, sort of having a theme for each day. That's a great model for any blogger out there who's trying to produce something on a consistent basis and not have to, and sort of give yourself a template for creating content on a weekly basis.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not afraid to, if we find, for example, that Tuesdays are the day where we are seeing less traffic, we'll switch it up a little bit. And this is just a lesson I learned from print. When I was at Smart Money, and we were in the stages of developing the magazine, it was very much a case of throwing spaghetti up against the wall and seeing what stuck. And I remember one particular feature that I pitched called Who Buys This Stuff? You know, the idea was there's so much out there that it's just ridiculous. Yeah. Let's do something every month called Who Buys This Stuff? And we very quickly ran through a few different things, and then we were kind of, it just wasn't working. You know, it wasn't, so we killed it. You go through that. You figure out what works, what sticks, what resonates with people.
Yeah. So you obviously have a lot of outposts out there. You're out there probably more than you are on your blog. So you get a lot of search engine traffic, but I'm assuming your direct traffic or referral traffic is a lot higher than your search traffic.
Yeah, I think it is, and I'm not the best one actually to talk to about my own numbers, sorry to say. But yeah, and we see bumps, you know. If I'm on Morning Joe, if I'm on the Today Show, I see a bump. I see a bump. And that's despite the fact that, you know, you're not really supposed to say, hey, go to my website. We direct everybody to the Today Show website, and then you get a referral from that.
Gotcha. So when they hit your site, what's your goal for having them there?
My goal is that they participate, that they see something that they like enough to come back. I mean, right now my goal is that they push on the Money School button and maybe join us for a class or two, or send their kids or send their spouse or whoever in their life they think would be benefited by that. You know, maybe we're lucky that people actually seem to spend a lot of time when they get there. They find different things that they like, different resources. Maybe they'll check out the books, and that's the goal. It's not it wasn't developed to be sales. That sure. That never felt good to me. So it's, you know, it's a place to come and to learn and to see what we've got and hopefully spread it around a little bit.
Right, and it's GeneChatsky.com. So obviously, I mean, you're known for this brand. I mean, people are coming there to find out more about you as well and see sort of what you're up to.
Yeah, right? So I do use it for that too. I get a lot of inquiries about speeches, you know, or from the media, can you talk to me for 5 minutes about credit cards? So that it's very effective and efficient for that.
I didn't have this question, but how often do you speak?
I speak more often in the spring and in the fall. I probably go out once a month.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit. You know, it tends to, there are not a lot of things happening where people want speakers necessarily in the summer. And winter travel is always an issue. So, you know, twice a month maybe in the spring and in the fall.
Okay.
But I really like it. I mean, for the same reason that I like doing this, I always end up with more story ideas from going out and doing a speech than when I got there, because people ask me questions, and that's the best way to know what's on the minds of people who don't live where I live. And that's, you know, as a journalist, that's really important.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay, so we've talked about the blog a little bit. What about social media? What avenues are you using social media-wise?
Twitter and Facebook.
Okay. Is that you doing it?
Yeah, it's me. It's me and my assistants, reporters. So I do tweet a lot. I really like Twitter. I find it fun and immediate. And when I'm like looking for news, it's fantastic to you want to know what's going on with the Pope, you just follow the Twitter feed and you've got it in real time, and that's great from smart people. Facebook, I'm not as enamored with Facebook as I am with Twitter. But yeah, I'm on there.
Okay. I would imagine, though, a lot of your user base is more on Facebook, right?
Definitely are. And we try to, I try to make sure that whatever I'm doing, we tell people about it on Facebook. And Facebook is nice when you're trying to take the pulse of your user base. So if I've got something to say and I put it on Facebook or I change my status, I just put it up there, immediately I get a lot of responses. And so that lets me know if I'm on the right track with something, much more than Twitter's a little more scattershot.
Right. Yeah. And I see Twitter as a way to interact a lot with peers, B2B. Of course, you're a celebrity, so you really have people who come to Twitter to follow you, because they know you and they want to know what's going on with you. So Twitter can be used that way. But for me, Twitter is a good B2B, how to meet other bloggers, how to meet people like yourself. That's what I think it's great for. Well, that's good. So next question was about, you sort of mentioned this, but talk about maybe the staff that you have, or that you said journalists that you have. How many do you have, and what do they do for you?
I've got two people who work with me full time, and then a couple of other people who work with me on a part-time basis. They are journalists. I mean, I make a my full-time people are journalists. They came out of school as journalists. They had journalism internships. I hired them because they are journalists. And although with my reporting assistant, there is some administrative work that needs to be done. That was part of the deal. You come on, you got to do the admin stuff, but you get to do real journalism as well. And so they help with everything, with reporting, with developing PowerPoints. When I was in production with Money Matters, which is my television show on RLTV. We've done two seasons, and we're waiting to hear if we get picked up for a third. Maggie, who's my reporting assistant, was producing. I mean, she,
Wow.
booking at producing, for lack of a better word, but she was doing what a Today Show producer does. She was booking guests and doing research. One of my Ariel, who's been with me now for 5, maybe 6 years, started as my assistant when I had just one person, and now she doesn't do the admin stuff anymore, but she reports, she does pre-interviews, she writes. I mean, she, I shouldn't really talk about them too much because somebody's gonna steal them.
So maybe share with everyone how you found these people, because my site's growing every day, and so hiring a journalist has a big appeal to me. Someone that can also help out with production like that. So how did you find these people, and
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I found them, well, different ways. I found Arielle because she had been the intern for a friend of mine, and I just put out feelers to the people that I knew, to other journalists that I was hiring, and he sent her to me, and he said, "And you're gonna love her because she's from the same state you're from." So,
Nice.
I gave her a test. I think it's really important. I tell anybody who's looking for a job in journalism, you better come prepared with some story ideas, and she totally did that. Maggie, I found through a network from my university. I am involved in mentoring student journalists from Penn, where I went to school,
Nice.
and she came in through that program, and she's just awesome. So that
That's
you know,
good.
And I think, you know, there's so many qualified student journalists coming out these days, and they not only know, I mean, you and I were talking technology as I was trying to get on this Hangout. Thank goodness I have people around who are younger than me, because they know this stuff like the back of their hand. They can shoot mostly in terms of operating a camera. You know, they know, they have much more of a, you know, my reporting background, my reporting training was on the phone. When Prodigy came along and we could actually find people for stories on the internet, that was a revelation.
Yeah.
It's so different. And so having young people, I'm not that old, but having young people around, it's just awesome. This summer we had an intern working on the television show, which was great. And then the other people, I have a woman who works with me on PR and marketing, but part-time.
I think this is probably a good time to sort of talk about the intersection of journalism and blogging or new media. And yeah, it seems to me that the two worlds are coming together. So much so that I even changed the name of Financial Blogger Conference to FinCon to not scare away journalists or columnists or people who are interested in new media from a financial perspective. So maybe just give me your thoughts on that. Where do you see things going, and maybe sort of touch on how bloggers can maybe act more like journalists, or some of the things we can learn from the classically trained journalist.
So I agree with you. I think it is, the worlds are really, really coming together. And if you just look at Andrew Sullivan and what he did recently to sort of give up the world of regular media and just do his blog on his own and get subscribers, he's been wildly successful. You sort of see how the world may progress. I think that journalists can learn from bloggers, that we don't always have to be long-winded, that you really can say it in very few words sometimes, and that actually people appreciate that. I think bloggers can learn from journalists that just because, you know, it's on the internet doesn't necessarily make it true. And you really do have to make sure that what you're writing about, what you're reporting about is based in fact, if it's not just an opinion piece. And that sometimes the best way to do that is on the phone.
Nice. That's something that scares me, and scares most bloggers, is actually doing it that way. But that's something I'm pushing myself toward, is more true journalism with a lot of the things we do, and a lot of the writers that I have work for me. We're pushing toward more original, more creative and unique ideas and stories. So I see our community moving in that direction for sure.
Yeah, and I think I'm friends with a woman named Melinda Emerson, who is on Twitter as the Small Biz Lady. And, you know, she went right from the blogging world to having a column on the New York Times website. You know, I think that the media is taking the blogging world much more seriously. And giving it much more respect than it used to, and that I mean, if you look at the Today Show, we are booking half the style segments these days are done by bloggers. Mm-hmm. Half the cooking segments seem to be done by bloggers. We are booking people who are coming out of the blogging world, and so I think the respect is there. You just have to make the connections, and I wouldn't be surprised if at FinCon this year, more representatives of the traditional media show up. Mm-hmm.
What's your thoughts on, as a blogger, as a site owner, I put on a lot of hats. One is monetization and advertising. One is journalism. One is marketing. So and you've traditionally just been a journalist, and I know you sort of not had to worry about those things, but that's probably with money school and some different things becoming more of a reality for you. So is that the antithesis of journalism, or do you see them being able to work hand in hand?
I think they're going to work hand in hand. I think they're going to have to work hand in hand. I haven't worked full time at a magazine since I left Money Magazine about four and a half years ago. And believe me, they had to, you know, drag me kicking and screaming out of there because I liked the comfort of being someone's employee. And now I live a largely freelance life. So essentially that monetization, yeah, is becoming more important and has become more important. And I hope at FinCon to actually learn some things about this part of the process, because I don't take ads on my site at this point. I've thought about it, but I'm not exactly sure what the reaction would be.
Sure. Well, you'll definitely learn that. So that we talk a lot about that at FinCon. So you'll definitely hear lots of different angles and stories in terms of that. So one of the things I have seen you do is you partnered with companies that have programs. So you just rolled out Money School, but
right.
In the past you partnered with financial tools or services. So maybe talk about how you got those relationships, and, you know, is that something that's, well, I don't want to say lucrative, but is that something that's provided a substantial portion of your revenue, or is that just a...
It's provided some, and what I've decided to do is to I work in the form of educational partnerships with companies, and so I don't do spokesperson endorsement type things, but I will develop content for them to distribute to their user bases, video content, written content, different sorts of tools, and so in that way it allows me to control the message. Because I'm not going to, you know, whether I'm working with the educational side of a financial services company, they're not going to be able to say, you have to say this about our products, because then that's not a relationship that would work for me. But they have, you know, the companies that I have worked with seem to find the value in me being able to educate their members about, or their customers or their users or whatever we're talking about their finances in general and about their financial, you know, needs and how to get to a better place. And the response from the customers of these companies has been overwhelmingly positive. You know, they feel the love, for lack of a better word. They feel like the company is trying to do something beneficial for them without really asking for anything in return, and that is a really, you know, that's a nice umbrella to be under.
Yes. This is probably a good time to sort of talk about how you got to that.
Oops, I just lost your audio for a second.
Oh, I'm sorry. Am I back now?
Now you're back.
Okay. So it's a good time to talk about how you, because you've been able to get to a certain point with your career, your brand, your personality, your sort of exposure and celebrity, that you're able to offer that service to companies. So let's maybe talk about some tips for, you know, bloggers like me who want to sort of expand their brand, their online personality, their awareness, you know, in traditional media, TV, whatever it is.
So tips, you want tips. Okay. Ideas are, you know, the best ideas are my capital, right? Ideas are, you can't have too many good ideas. And when you're looking to deal with the mainstream media, if you come up with a good idea and they can use that idea, then they'll use you, essentially. And that is how I have stayed on television and in magazines. I never go into a meeting without 20 ideas. Never. Because it's really, really that important. You have to give the person on the other side of the table the feeling of respect, and that's how I think that you do it. I think it's really important to be low maintenance. I mean, sometimes I am told that I should be more of a diva, and I just don't. I don't buy it. I think you should be a pleasure to work with. And even if it means that it's a lot of work to get to be that, you have to be, you have to be willing to actually do the work and make your producers look good. And so that's important. I have used PR, and I've hired people to help me, do PR throughout, for the last 10 years. Essentially, and it's been really, 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 really helpful. I don't think that I could. You can have the ideas, but not be able to get on TV because you don't know the producer. But if you hire somebody who can open that door for you, and then you can deliver, that's one way to do it. And so if you're looking to hire somebody to help you spread the word about your brand, I think those sorts of connections are really important. And you got to make sure that you hire a publicist that the magazine editors or the newspaper editors or whomever you're trying to reach actually likes. And I had one more. Wait, give me one sec. Oh, I don't remember.
There must have been something in you, because you were just working at Smart Money, not just working at Smart Money, but you were had the privilege of working with Smart Money and doing the startup with them. That must have been a wonderful experience. Up to that point, you were sort of behind the pen, behind the keyboard, and then you go to NBC Today Show.
Not directly.
Okay.
So I did local TV. I mean, what happened when this PR guy at Smart Money, this guy named Drew Kerr, who was a really terrific publicist, started putting people on TV, and it was something that had always appealed to me. My father was in TV, and so I didn't go into college looking to do that because I thought that was his thing. I was interested, and I had done some theater, and so I kind of liked the stage. And he put other people on TV, and I kept saying, "Well, when are you going to put me on TV?" And then when he actually got me something to do, I had a story that was worth talking about. I really, really, really prepared. Studied the heck out of it so that I would be good. And it was on local morning TV, and they asked me to come back. And while I was doing that, Matt Lauer was the anchor on the local station, and so when I 3 years later, I got the tryout at Today, thanks to him, and just have been able to it's been my home for 18 years. While other things around have changed. So I've been really, really lucky. I remember what the other thing I was going to say was, when a door presents itself, go through it. I didn't know I wanted to write a book until somebody called me and said, "Have you ever thought about writing a book?" And I didn't know I would ever give a speech until one of the other contributors from Today said, I was talking to these people at the Speakers Bureau and they asked about you. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's just sometimes the opportunities present themselves and you go through and you talk to people and you listen to their ideas and you work with people that you never thought you were going to end up working with, and it turns out to be terrific.
Awesome. Well, that's great advice. And Gene, it's been wonderful talking with you, and you have a fabulous story, and I'm excited to see you in person at FinCon this fall. What will you be sharing with us on stage at FinCon, do you think?
Well, I think some of the stuff that you and I have talked about here, I'll talk about, you know, my approach to journalism and blogging and the two of them together. I'll talk about how I see personal finance these days, how it's changed. I feel so fortunate to have had a seat for this revolution and what people really need these days in terms of what they are looking for in content. I'll happily answer questions. I'm looking forward to actually being at FinCon for a little while and you know, meeting people and learning things myself.
Great. Well, we're lucky to have you there, and we're glad you'll be on board with us. So thanks so much for being on the podcast with me today. Where can folks connect with you or find out more about what all you have going on?
My website is the best place. It's GeneChatsky.com. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, that'd be awesome, at GeneChatsky.
Okay. Thanks so much, Gene, and best of luck this weekend and in future endeavors.
Thanks.
All right.